You know how people talk about having a favourite colour?
Why?
I definitely don't have a favourite colour.
You don't. I think it's something you do when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm. I don't even think I had a favourite colour when I was a kid. I think when I was a kid, I would just be like, change every day. Like, my favourite colour is this, my favourite colour is that.
My mum's favourite colour is purple. Everybody knows it.
And she got loads of purple things.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Her hair was purple when she met my dad.
Really?
In like 1972, like pre-glam.
How did she get it purple? Like, did they have...
Her friend was a trainee hairdresser.
Mm-hmm.
And tried to bleach it. And then something went wrong. And the most neutral colour that they could settle on was purple. She just kept on adding dyes to it until...
Oh, well.
Until like, she thought, right, I've got...
So your mum, Sheila, basically started the alternative look?
Yeah, yeah, she was there. Right, hello and welcome to podcast number 8 of...
Back to Sorry, got mixed up.
Hello and welcome to podcast number 8 of...
Stacks of Wax and Glasgow Acts.
What did you get mixed up with? Are you just doing another podcast on the side?
I'm cheating on you.
Cheating on me.
No, I just went to say like 2 words at once.
Anyway, we have no guest this week. We've just... I'd love to have an excuse. We don't... we've just
it wasn't our fault.
Well, we should sort of chase up other guests, etc. But yeah, it's going to just be me and Ailey.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how this goes, because we've not done this for weeks and weeks and weeks. Mm-hmm. When it's just me. So what have you been up to this week? What do you mean you and me, me and you?
You said when it's just been me.
And you and me.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Woofed. A bit of attitude coming through.
No, I didn't mean I'm here too. I didn't mean it as an attitude. It was just, you like to correct me, so I'm just giving it right back.
I've never corrected anybody. Right, what have you been up to?
I've just been really busy with uni work. I was gigging with you in the Borrowed Blues on Saturday in Clyde Bank, where I'm from.
Sunny Clyde Bank.
Yeah, so it was a fun gig. It was long. Long, but it was fine. It was good. And then I've just been busy doing uni work. I've got a few things due in the next week or so. So I'm just getting all that sorted. And I think that's all I've been up to.
Nothing. It's been quite quiet. I think things are starting to kind of wind down for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Nights are fair drawn in and all that. There's a kind of real sense of...
Coziness
and people not going out as often or as late or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is great radio. Great chat here.
I know, chatting about the weather.
Yeah.
But it was Guy Fawkes night.
Aye. Did you do anything?
No, because you didn't do anything. Who else am I going to do something with? You and Alex will do anything.
We've been too busy. We've been too creative.
I know. We've got some fun things planned, though.
Yeah, definitely.
But they're not related to the podcast.
No. So, you can ask me what I've done.
What have you been doing, Neil? There we sorry. Go.
Every week.
I'm sorry.
can I drift it out? Can I go, so yeah, how are we going to end this bit about what Ailey's been up to?
I'm sorry.
I've been busy on various bits and pieces. Got somebody in for recording tomorrow. The Tenement TV session on Friday. Doing more videos with Phil Campbell and the Bison family. Hopefully on Friday as well. Doing some work with Anton O'Donnell. So I need to do some practicing for that. Me and Alex are doing various bits and pieces. So I need to brush up my various bits and pieces skills for that. And then we've got some downtime between the 11th and the 1st.
Yep.
Nay weddings. So that's the point where we're going to really focus on all the wee bits and pieces of original stuff that we're
mm-hmm.
involved in.
I'm going holiday.
I think you're going on holiday. I think I'm going a weekend to St Andrews.
You're coming to St Andrews. And then I won't.
Aye.
That's still a holiday.
Aye.
Don't be ungrateful.
I'm not ungrateful at all. I'm just... You're going to Tenerife or something like that, you mm-hmm. know? Right, there you go. Traditional holiday destination. St yeah. Andrews is more of a wee visit away, wee break, weekend away stuff.
It'll
anyway,
be fun.
And on Saturday, do you know what you're doing on Saturday?
I'm going to see Neil in a movie.
No. That was the grammar was all wrong in that one.
I'm going to see a film that Neil's in.
Might be in.
Neil might be in.
So Outlaw King, the Netflix film series.
The beard got him in the extras.
It's about Robert the Bruce, and it's almost a year to the release.
I can't get over that photo of you, though. If anybody wants to find out the costume and of what Neil had to wear, go on Neil's Facebook. We'll share it on the Stacks of Wax page. We're doing it. I've said it now.
Everything I post on my Facebook's public anyway.
Oh, is it? Okay. Mm. But I'm still going to post it on Stacks of Wax.
So, yeah, about a year ago, there was an advert for... They were looking for people with big beards for a Scottish historical drama. And I took the bait as one of the many plates that I spin. And it kind of sent me on this course of... I kind of signed up to all these different extras agencies, which I advised everybody to do because you get offers through. And some of them were quite interesting. Very rarely is there enough notice for you actually to do it. Like, can you come to Sky to be in a whiskey advert? It's £1,500 a day. You need to leave in the next hour.
But do you have to go to an agency and get photos taken and things like that before you get...
So, the agency that I did for Outlaw King, they had a kind of recruitment day.
Right.
Where you waited in a big long queue.
Did you actually do that?
Well, yes and no. I kind of gave it an hour, and I thought, fuck this, forget my soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, that's us done for the day. We're not going to be able to see anybody else in the queue. So they gave everybody a raffle ticket to skip the queue the next morning. But I was like 3 hours still to go in the queue.
Really?
So I kind of skipped the queue.
Oh, good.
I turned up with my raffle ticket the next morning. Like, excellent, in you come. I was like, whoa, there was...
Was it in Glasgow?
Yeah. It was at Kelvin Hall.
Right. Did you know anybody... Sorry, I'm asking all these questions. Did you know anybody that was doing it with you? Or did you just
I happened to have some downtime that week. My mum bullied me into going because she's always like, oh, you'd be dead good at that. And I went along and I kind of thought nothing of it.
I pray that you're going to be in this on Saturday.
And then I got my photo taken. They asked me various questions. They measured my height and they took these awful photos, like head and shoulder shots. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm the least photogenic person ever. And they didn't make me any more photogenic. Like, it was really terrible. I just looked tired.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was very bright. Anyway, from that one, they then sent me a message a couple of months later and said, would you be available to do this on such and such a day? And I thought, aye, why not? So.
And now you're a Hollywood superstar?
Yeah, I went and get measured. They told me I was a monk, and I went and get measured. For my stuff, and I had to go to somewhere in like Postle.
Right.
And get measured for my stuff, and that was minimum 2 hours, and you get just less than minimum wage by the time people have taken the agencies have taken their fees and everything.
Right. Okay.
But that was like quite good fun. You kind of went and got your clothes on and everything, and it was just kind of 2 or 3 hours. I think I was there 40 minutes and I got paid 2 hours work, so that was kind of all right. And then the actual days on the shoot, we had to be in like Merchant City for like 4:30 in the morning, like too early for buses and too late for... And then a kind of day of hanging about.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, we were there for like 6 in the morning to make sure that we'd our makeup done and our wigs in place and all the rest. And then like so 4 in the afternoon, we actually went on set.
All your makeup and hair not a mess by then?
Well, we didn't
have to just sit like this?
There was constantly people coming round and kind of fixing it for you.
So that would be amazing. That's like if you're on like a TV show.
And they were all Northern Irish. Their chat was dead good.
Oh, you like the Northern Irish accent, don't you?
So they were all coming round and they'd kind of fix your hair. Because that was their job as well. And they had big long shifts and were not getting paid much more than us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of hanging about. And then all the monks were dead rough. So it was a good laugh. We actually got told off for laughing quite a few times. They told me my laugh could be heard on set, and the set was like 400 yards away.
Your laugh is very loud, Neil. So your laugh is very loud.
It was good fun. I think I did a scene where it was the wedding, and a scene where it was a funeral, and a scene where it was a coronation. All the things where you had monks in the background. So I might be in the edit, I might not be in the edit.
Well, we're going to go see it anyway.
Off the back of that, I kind of signed up for another few things, and I get various offers through every now and again, but I can rarely actually do them. You usually have to cross off several days and then not know if you're actually going to be picked or get paid or whatever. And it pays, but it's not a lot of money. But I did kind of advise everybody to kind of sign up for them. Some of them, you send in your own photos. Some of them, you go along, get your photos taken. Some of them, they keep the photos. Some of them, you're allowed to use those photos elsewhere. Yada, yada. It's always going to be a wee bit interesting. It was quite weird being kind of herded like cattle, because I'm self-employed and almost everything I do, there isn't really a boss. There's just a work to be done, and we can all muck in and get it done. Whereas that was a bit kind of, nope, you do this, sit down, be quiet. Da-da-da. And you're like, that's quite a strange mm-hmm. position for several people to be in.
Yeah,
would I do it again? I don't know. Depends
well,
what I was doing.
You wait until you see yourself on the big screen, you might get the bug for it. Change your career.
Possibly. Turn into an extra. I don't turn into an actor. No. It's not for me. But yeah, so Saturday we're going to check that out. And if anybody knows what I look like, then watch it on Netflix. It's on Netflix on Friday. And see if you can see me.
Mm-hmm.
And the monk.
So it's actually out on Friday before we go and see it?
Aye.
Oh, don't watch it.
I'm busy all day Friday though.
Okay,
so,
good. Good, because we shouldn't watch it. We should wait until we watch it.
So, have you noticed any news this week?
The Spice Girls are making a comeback.
I put that in my list as well.
Did you? Okay.
Aye. You keep on thinking that people, everybody kind of laughs at it. It's kind of high camp.
That's very...
Nobody's taking it seriously.
Like, it's going to be absolutely murder to get a ticket. I'm not really interested in going at all.
I kind of think of it as a kind of live hen night.
yeah, a live hen. Totally. Because I never really was that big a Spice Girls fan.
It's probably before your time.
Obviously, do you think so? No.
The first single would have been 96, 95, 96, what wannabe.
Right, okay. But still, I know all the tunes and stuff,
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, okay, but there was a... The start of the 90s was boy bands, Take That and Westlife and Boyzone and all the rest. There wasn't really a girl band. There was a couple of attempts. Eternal. Can't really remember. So I think when the Spice Girls came along, it was kind of girl power, and it was quite good for...
Yeah, I guess so.
For kind of... Even if you were like
Atomic
five or
Kitten.
Six.
Remember
Atomic
then.
Kitten was probably afterwards.
Yeah.
Probably after the Spice Girls. Spice Girls kind of opened the door.
Bewitched,
I would have said.
Irish?
Later.
The Irish?
Probably.
Yeah, I think they are.
They get bottled off at Glastonbury one year.
Yeah, you told me about this.
Dodgy booking. There's a video online.
no.
But I think it's great. I think it'll be a
You're going to go, Neil? You're definitely going to go.
Very unlikely. I think it'll be good nostalgia.
Tell you what I want. Do you know a cool fact about Wannabe?
Right.
It is the... I didn't actually research this, I actually already knew this.
Right.
I'm going to sound very clever right now. You probably already know this. Wannabe is the, how do I describe this? It was tested in the most recognisable song within, like, the first, minus first second is Wannabe because of the...
Good.
No, because I'll tell you what I want.
Okay, okay.
So everybody knows that it's going to be that song before. Well, that's like the...
Yeah, that's... It was huge. It was miraculous. It was everything that it needed to be. And the world seemed to be ready for it. Because I think they were quite big in the States and everything.
Yes, definitely.
But they're all still kind of... They've all got regional accents. They're all quite scaffy and working class. So it's... I think that kind of adds to it.
Apart from Victoria Beckham.
Victoria Beckham's the chaviest of the lot because you put posh in front of her name.
No, she's like, she doesn't even fucking speak, to be fair.
No, she's a proper chav. Scummy chav. I'm sure she does lots of work for charity. Well done, Victoria. But yeah, she's She's did the you see that picture
that's in you? It was like, yay! Come see us on tour. We ran out of money.
Yeah, I don't know that they will have run out of that money, that much money.
No, they'll still be racking up royalties.
Eddie Murphy gave Scary Spice $7 million for that baby he gave her.
He gave her? Yeah. That was the way you put that. It's terrible news.
Well,
he gave her, as if he gave her a baby.
Well, he fought it all the way. She had to take him to court and everything. And
what, he thought that it wasn't his?
Yeah, paternity tests and everything. He was like, I've never met the bitch. That was my best Eddie Murphy impression.
She's always in the press with, am I right? She's always in the press with, like, divorce and...
I really can't remember. I'm not a big reader of the tabloids anymore, and I have no animosity to them, but I quite enjoy it. It's kind of like, hey, the Spice Girls, because they're kind of laughing at themselves. They know their shit.
Yeah.
And it's quite
they
cool.
Might not. I don't think they do.
I think they do. It's there's like kind of tongue in cheek to it.
Is that right? Okay, I guess so.
I think so.
Oh, well.
I don't think
I love how you said it was going to be like a live hen night. That's really funny.
I think
you
it
totally
is.
Can imagine it, but the groups of people that are going to go are going to be dressed up.
Yeah.
Have t-shirts, like personalised stuff.
It's so much fun.
It's good.
I can't have anything against it.
I can see my big cousins and my sister wanting to go with
it. I really don't have anything against it. Where are they playing? Murrayfield, Hampden.
I don't even know. I've not even
I think it's a stadium. I think it's proper stadium. But I don't quote me on this. I thought I looked through it and it was like Salford, Manchester, Glasgow, Dublin. It was all working class. It was all like big working class stadiums. So I think there is definitely a kind of like the girls done good aspect to it.
Pat in the back.
Aye. I think if they were posh RP accents, I don't think they would have went quite as far. But anyway, yeah.
Oh, well, hats off to Spice Girls, there.
What else have you seen?
The Kilmarnock Dirty Weekender was called off.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's quite interesting. So, it was quite, when I first saw it, I thought, oh wow, that's happening in Kilmarnock. There's some big names there. It was headlined by Jake Bugg and the Coral, who are big names, but they're kind of like big names 10 years ago or 5 years ago or something like that, so you're a bit kind of like, and then it was £60, so it was
excuse me,
it was sort of like a 4-day festival. It's a bit like Tenement Trail but kind of spread across 4 days. And it was £60 a ticket.
I don't know if, obviously I don't want to judge, this is literally just my opinion or my whatever. My understanding is that Glasgow is quite, I find that a lot of people come to Glasgow from different places for said night out, or
for said live
music or whatever. I've never heard of anybody going to Kilmarnock.
I think that's the kind of interesting bit. Like,
it's different.
People should go to these kind of outlying villages, because everybody that's from these outlying villages will complain. Kilmarnock's not a village, it's a town. But they'll complain that music's stuck in the central belt. So we should kind of, that's one of the remits of the Creative Scotland money that you can get, is to try and spread music around Scotland a bit more, kind of open new audiences outside of the kind of obvious places. So that's obviously Kilmarnock trying to do that. Now you could argue that Kilmarnock being 30 minutes in the train from Glasgow doesn't really do that, but I grew up quite near Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock was our kind of big shopping town, so
yeah, it's not far
when from your family go to Brayhead on a Saturday when you were growing up. I guess you did you?
Yeah, I guess so.
We went to Kilmarnock. So I kind of know it quite well, and it is a scummy working class town that needs a regeneration. Like, their high street didn't really suffer during the credit crunch because it was already a shithole. The kind of main shopping street's just full of junkies. It looks like The Walking Dead. And the bus stop's no much better. No, it's just true. I'm just stating fact. Everybody knows it to be true. So I think it's amazing when you see something going on there.
Yeah.
But obviously it wasn't enough for people to buy tickets for it. It also suffers because the EH6 Festival, which basically is the same lineup, was on in Edinburgh.
Oh, really?
On the same weekend with Jake Bugg, the Coral, and all the... So... I can't imagine that anybody would do two. It's probably a bit easier for Glaswegians to imagine going to Edinburgh than it is for them going to Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock's probably closer. But Edinburgh's more practised. I think it's a shame.
Edinburgh's shite.
I think it would be really, really good. What?
I said Edinburgh's shite.
I thought you said I need a shite. I'm like,
no! I told you, I'm winding down the inappropriate humour because my mammy's been listening to this. I have to get a grip.
Sorry, Ailey's mum. She doesn't shite.
She'll know that.
Yeah, I think it's a real shame. I don't quite know what the answer is for trying to make that happen. I think the world would be a better place if it did make it happen. There's been some decent gigs going on in Kilmarnock. There's a few bands have been down playing in Bakers, which I've never been in. I don't know what it used to be called, or I've never been in it. I don't know. It's a long time since I've been out in Kilmarnock. And then the Grand Hall is legendary.
I don't think I've ever been out in Kilmarnock. I drive by it multiple times a week.
Maybe we should make an effort to go to a gig in Kilmarnock. Seriously, it's a half hour train and then you can wander around once you're there.
Well, I was going to say you can drive.
Then there's the Grand Hall. My interesting fact about the Grand Hall is Ballroom Blitz by The Sweet was written about a fight at the Grand Hall.
You've told me this, I'm pretty sure.
I've probably said it in the podcast as well. So yeah, it's a shame. Hopefully, Stumpy's well respected as a promoter. He says he's going to can his promotions company, but time will tell. He's done a lot of hard work in kind of getting bands to the kind of outlying towns. But yeah, who knows? Only time will tell. Right, what else have we got? Right at this moment, the Ninth Wave are doing a gig at Doc Martens, and it's free.
They do that once a year, right?
Yeah,
we kind of did it before,
last year with Morgan.
You've done it before,
they gave us all a pair of Doc Martens.
Amazing.
Called five of us, six. I can't remember how many.
I'd love
on the band.
That.
I think that's the most we ever get paid. As long as you accept that it's Doc Martens, you're getting 100 quid pair of shoes.
And they're very expensive.
For 5 years or whatever.
And they last for the forever.
Yeah, definitely. They've been great. Anyway,
sponsor us.
Ninth Wave are playing that. The Doc Martens should totally sponsor the music industry. See, once I did that, I started to notice that everybody all the time is wearing Doc Martens.
I know.
It's unreal.
I live in mine most of the time.
You've got Converse on.
I've got Converse on right now. Also, Converse. Converse is also a great option. Sponsor.
Yeah, Converse are owned by Nike.
Nike too.
So there's a
I've got Nike trainers in the hall.
But there's a kind of double edged sword here because Converse are kind of the shoes of grunge, the shoes of punk, the shoes of.
I love how Neil's sitting here talking about fashion as if he's a total connoisseur on.
What, I've got an old t-shirt, a pair of shorts and bare feet.
I know, that's what I mean, because what? You don't care what you look like.
No, but I'm kind of aware of kind of the history of Converse and how it's kind of seen as subculture and all the rest. But Nike bought them 5 to 10 years ago, so they're actually every bit as corporate as the running shoes, and they're probably made in a small Asian factory by small Asian children.
To be fair though, these have lasted me a good while.
I love Converse. Converse is my shoes of choice.
I've had these since 2013.
My Converse would never last that long. Mm-hmm. I must have wide feet or something. I burst through them.
Mm-hmm. What's that, 5 year? No, maybe not that long. Maybe not. Maybe I'm being a bit.
There we go. The weather and now our shoe wear.
Sorry.
Anyway, yeah, look out for Doc Martens doing gigs. I think they're really, really good, but you need tickets and it sold out very, very quickly.
And it's probably happening right now.
Yeah, Ninth Wave, they were on the Radio 1 through the week.
Mm-hmm.
Got a new single out. They're doing very, very well. Same manager as Lucia, who also has a
Tenement TV session just came out.
That you
filmed?
Filmed the Tenement TV session, and they have a new EP that's out and all over Spotify, etc. It sounds great. I love her stuff. There's also new music by Crash Club. Did you listen to the new music by Crash Club?
Right. No, I didn't. Neil.
You didn't? Do you know Crash Club?
No.
You're allowed to not know Crash Club.
I don't.
It's fine.
I don't.
Right.
No, I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at the previous.
Crash Club. You would really like Crash Club. Crash Club worships Screamadelica.
Right.
So it all sounds. It's kind of indie, dancey,
synthy.
Well, there's guitars and bass and everything.
Yeah, but there's a lot of kind of synthy
but
stuff.
But then there's kind of guest vocalists. So it's quite cool. You'll quite like it. Anyway, they've got a new single, which is produced by someone, Jazz, someone who worked with Primal Scream and all their idols.
Right.
It's super cool. It's kind of cool party music, get you in the mood. They have played here, there, and everywhere, and they're lovely fellows from Ayrshire somewhere. And I think it's cool winning. Sorry, Neil, if I've misquoted. I think it's cool.
Neil,
winning.
Just fake it till you make it. Say it with confidence and nobody will even question
he's
you.
He's called Neil, so that's why I was saying Neil.
Just not be serious, but just be like, from cool winning and that. Nobody's going to question. They'll be like, yep, that guy knows what he's talking about.
I think Neil's
going
to come on the podcast, or so he's probably
that'll
listening.
Be dead confusing, though. Well, we need to think of a different name for you. I love how you, like, brushed up your shoulders there to make him.
We'll think of something.
Right.
Father Son have announced a tour. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Glasgow date in May. And
did they not just play the Battlelands like 2 weeks ago?
Yes. That was probably not their tour though.
I'm not 100% sure, but I've seen
that. That was maybe
that
a one-off show. Anyway, they're playing at the O2 Academy and it is apparently their biggest show to date.
Amazing. Amazing. They're doing really well. I don't know if I'll bother going. I've literally seen them live so many times.
Who else have we got? Man of Minch is playing tomorrow night in Hugging Pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro.
Yeah, he's a potential guest on the podcast.
Aye, plays fiddle and also does his own stuff under Man of Minch. He won the Transmit thing that the Underground were doing.
That's right, the Transmit. Subway thing.
I'm busy, so I can't go, but you should go.
What day is it?
Tomorrow night.
I've already got plans.
Oh, look at you all fancying busy.
Am I not allowed to be busy? God's sake.
Leon Bridges is playing on Friday. We nearly went to that because we like his album from about 3 years ago. The new stuff's
turns
bit,
out his new stuff's gash.
His new stuff's a bit poppy.
So he played, he's playing this week?
Aye, it's Friday.
Oh, my friend's going to that. Friend Leanne.
Tom McGuire and the Brassholes are doing their big sold out show at the Art School on Sunday.
Yes. We can't go though.
We can't go because we're busy socialising people. Did you notice that King Tut's New Year Revolution has been announced?
Yes.
Did you see who's playing?
I did. I actually noticed that a few people I know have been announced.
Pretty good. It's on every year and it's quite a good way of seeing a lot of bands in a short period of time.
Because there's always that kind of dry spell at the start of the year with gigs. Like I always find the winter time.
You can buy a ticket for the whole month and then just kind of wander in and out.
It's quite interesting because they do like the gigs up the stairs and then they also have like a band playing in the bar
the
area.
And usually somebody
like
DJing as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good way of seeing lots of bands. It's also good if you're like, don't know, writing reviews for a blog or something like that, or taking photos or doing your kind of networking, you can get quite a lot done on the cheap, so to speak.
I love how it's all a varied mix of genres as well.
They do it in a
way where it's like each night is a different,
it's always
like,
themed.
Yep, themed, because there's a kind of country kind of thing, a country kind of night, and it was.
We have Luna the Professor, they used to be called something else, and I found them once. I think they were on the Hit the Road thing for young bands. I can't remember.
You were about to say Hit the Road Jack.
Hit the Road Jack. Rising Souls, they're pretty good, I think. I think they're a kind of bluesy band from Edinburgh. Apologies if they aren't. Let me see. Katie Cross and the Amber Jacks, with James Edwin and the Borrowed Band.
A girl called Riley? Riley Music, is that there?
Don't see it yet. Yeah, lots and lots of cool things going on. Walt Disco, Crystal, that'll be quite a good night. Oh, Tenement TV's DJing, that'll be Jamie looking for a... Oh, Cameron in Brisbane's doing a DJ set, there we go. Photographer extraordinaire. Yeah, I'll probably Yeah, Riley's playing the same night as a lassie called Denny Smith, who was also in the Hit the Road thing. And yeah, generally, there's kind of interesting stuff each night. So I pop along to that.
Might be safer to walk.
There's there's also Bobby Gillespie is speaking at Mono. He's doing a kind of talking thing about their album that was recorded, and then the recordings were abandoned and then recorded elsewhere, and they've released the original recordings. The album's called something like Give Out But Don't Give Up, or Give Up But Don't Give Out, or I can't quite remember. It's one of those.
Confidence, Neil, confidence.
I love Primal Screamer. I love that album, and it's the one with Rocks and Jailbird and Crying Myself Blind and all that Pavlova, and they've released some different mixes on it. So that it's at Mono, and that sold out like nobody's business.
Nobody's business.
So get along to that if you have a ticket. Right. So for our albums thing,
we are trying Ailey to decided. Try a new thing because
Ailey was getting bored.
No, I think we have to have a preferred length.
Three and a half hours is a bit long for a podcast.
Yes, please, it is. It totally is. I personally like to listen to podcasts that are around an hour/hour and a half, which is kind of what we started with. We were doing well. It's just escalating, and I am like, by the third hour,
you're sober.
I'm sitting in the chair in front of a mic and just like.
So, what are we going to do?
So, what we're going to do is, we're all going to pick an album, right. Just the same. We can talk about the album as a whole and all that, but instead of doing track by track, just pick the three songs that stand out on the album for each person.
To try and shrink it down.
And it just makes it, I think it makes it a bit more personal to
right.
each of us, because you get to actually pick your favourite song.
Good.
Okay.
Let's see how that goes.
Do you understand that?
Just
kidding. And
do you know what patronising means? It means
totally
kind of talking.
I know.
It means kind of talking down to somebody. You understand? Yeah.
Yeah, you do it to me all the time. Yeah. That's just, there you go. That's for you. Tasting your own medicine.
I didn't deny it.
Yeah, you totally did, because you know you do it. So, what album have you picked, Neil?
Well, I went with The Who. It was a wee bit of a kind of last minute.
Who's that?
Now, you wanted to do
I'm totally
Miss Undaz Tood by Pink. that well-known dyslexic.
Miss Undaz Tood. What's wrong with that? It's just a cool like, hipster joking. Way to say it.
She's totally cool. Bet she's got graffiti in the front cover and everything.
You fucking know that.
So, I kind of wanted to. You kind of said, "Well, I'll go proper pop." And I thought, right, if you go proper pop, then I'll go proper classic. So the first one that came to mind was The Who. Is it my favourite Who album? It's probably the best Who album. Whether it's my favourite, I probably have
Who's album.
I probably have a.
Do you think they meant that when they made their name?
It's the album's called Who's Next.
No, like, do you think they thought like the band name's going to be The Who? Do you think they thought that's going to be so confusing for them?
I can't think of much commentary on it.
You're not enjoying my joke.
No, it's just it's a hard joke to kind of respond to. Who? Oh, who?
You do that all the time, though.
Oh. It's fine. I've made the joke loads of times. Everybody's made the joke loads of times.
Remember? The other day, I was going to Tesco, and Neil had shouted to me and Alex to get him bulbs for his bathroom. He's like, get halogen... Is it halogen?
Mm-hmm.
Halogen bulbs. And I'm standing at the door going, what, what? And Neil's going... halogen bulbs! I'm like, What? What? He's like, how would you go? It's like, you know what? What is?
Oh. So much fun. Anyway, yeah, everybody makes that joke about the Who. And
sorry.
It's an amazing album. It's an absolute classic. It's recorded by Glenn Jones, so it's like related to Led Zeppelin and Stones. All the rest was recorded at Mick Jagger's house, a lot of it and everything. The Who were at the height of their career, and it's bombastic and wonderful, and they'd just done Tommy. So the Who were this kind of wee pop band that then had a couple of singles, and then it kind of tailed off, and everybody assumed that that would be career over. And then they brought out Tommy in 1969, which is one of my dad's favourite albums, and one of the first albums I kind of fell in love with on vinyl. Which is probably officially my favourite Who album, I'm not quite sure. It's a double album. I've not quite worked out how the podcast is going to deal with double albums yet. So it's...
No, what you mean is you don't know how Ailey's going
to
deal with a double album.
We need to get you an especially good gin for that. So the Who's Next came after that, and Pete Townshend, who's a highly troubled man, was kind of, he didn't know how to follow up the success of Tommy, because
mm-hmm.
Tommy had been like huge, that had relaunched them, because Tommy's basically the original concept album and opera, and it's alright. I can't celebrate the production because it sounds really dated, and there's a lot of filler on it, and you really have, if you're not into it, then you really won't like it, you know what I mean? So I'm never going to try and sell it to you. But at the time, everybody loved it because they could get Stone Gold.
Oh man,
yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh man, I wasn't alive at the time. Oh man, this is so amazing! Like, you know the story, you know what happens. Like, see, I think like the third song, like, and it was a total. Everybody was just into it, kind of putting their own representation on it. So he tried to follow that up with another concept called Lifehouse, where it was like the internet,
mm-hmm.
But like,
totally. Yeah, there was quite a lot of. I read quite a lot about how they had referenced
Lifehouse
through the songs that you chose.
Yeah, so they
I know you're probably going to talk about that.
Failed to make that happen in some way, and he was an alcoholic and took too many drugs, and generally quite a troubled person. But the kind of remnants of Lifehouse became this album, and it's absolutely solid. There's definitely some album tracks on it that aren't necessarily singles.
Mm-hmm.
They're quite good fun. There's one about the bass player's wife's going to kill him for being out too late and everything. And it's dead funny. The Who were always kind of not scared to write comedy songs. So, in an ongoing attempt to choose three songs and only talk about three songs, I've went for Bab O'Reilly, Behind Blue Eyes, and Won't Get Fooled Again. So Bab O'Reilly... we were listening to it while we were setting up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a big, big, big rock song. It's got a kind of, probably at the time, what was quite an original synth arpeggiated part. Probably took absolutely ages to program and record, and there would have been a kind of crow's nest of cables coming out the thing in order to make it go. And there's a Keith Moon suggested violin solo on it as well. Probably first started to love this song when I became an aficionado of Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam got famous really, really fast, to the extent that they only had about 14 songs, and everybody kept on asking them to do encores. So eventually
Did they just keep playing the same songs?
No, they started covering their favourite bands. So Bab O'Reilly has been in the Pearl Jam set for forever.
Is that how you kind of knew that then? Or?
I was almost certainly, I knew The Who before I knew Pearl Jam. I probably didn't know this album, and probably didn't know Bab O'Reilly. I knew Tommy before I knew Pearl Jam. I probably,
that's why covering songs is good.
Yeah.
Because it does kind of get that.
They were big on covering The Who and big on covering Neil Young in their early days. And still, it's very common for them to close a show with this song. Either Bab O'Reilly, Rockin' in the Free World, a Neil Young song, or Yellow Lead Better, or Alive. And Alive is only later. They never did that because they were so cool and it was so popular. But it was Bab O'Reilly for
it's
you.
It's quite surprising you've not done a Pearl Jam album yet.
I've avoided it.
Because you could just talk forever.
just talk forever, and I don't know how into it anybody is. So I'm kind of waiting for somebody else to choose it. I'll bring on a guest and I'll make them choose it. So yeah, Bab O'Reilly's ding, 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 and that's the Keith Moon beat.
Right. It's quite a cool kind of thing at the start, though.
Yeah. It's highly impossible to have made at the time on a synth. Now I could knock it up in Logic in 2 minutes. That's the world that we now live in. The beating heart of The Who was always Keith Moon. So I grew up like reading books about the history of it, and there's lots and lots of legendary stories about Keith Moon. Pete Townsend's deaf in 1 ear because of a incident on the first American TV show they were on. It was called The Smothers Brothers. And Keith Moon filled his kick drum with gunpowder and then set light to it at the end. So there was a massive bomb went off on the stage and deafened Pete Townsend. Have I ever shown you the video?
No.
Right, go on to YouTube.
Oh my goodness me.
Yeah, anyway, that was a wee aside where I showed Ailey the Smothers Brothers video. So Keith Moon was absolutely wild, and I think he basically had a screw loose. And his drumming shows that, because he never plays a straight beat. He just is just constantly all over the kit, and I don't know if he ever practiced. I don't know if anybody ever taught him. He was just pure energy plus drugs thrown at the drums, and just he's the ultimate drummer. I'm sure there's some very, very good drummers out there that think he's terrible.
Amazing.
But,
they might think he's amazing too.
I think he's amazing. Yeah. So you have that kind of beating heart. And then I took a wee kind of tender moment with Behind Blue Eyes, which is, did you listen to it?
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of beautiful acoustic. This album's actually dips a toe in country.
Yeah.
It does, because
I thought that when I was listening to it today.
He got a new guitar off someone, maybe someone from the Eagles, I can't remember. And it started to be a wee bit, the way he bends some strings into things. It starts with kind of the acoustic thing, and then by the end it goes full Who, and kind of brings that,
mm-hmm.
the whole band in. I absolutely love The Who. Fascinating band. Fascinating how it's orchestrated, because Keith Moon can't play in time either. It's not, he's terrible. All the things that you want from a drummer, he doesn't have. But he has this kind of ball of energy, and it's contained by, like, if you said, right, we've got a really, really busy drummer, I would have said, right, as long as you kind of root the bass player in, then it'll be fine. But the bass player plays really, really complicated stuff, right? John Entwistle. And then Pete Townsend as the guitarist. Normally, if you had one guitarist in a band, he would be all over the place. But he plays relatively little when they're live. So it's really pretty interesting. He's also the songwriter. So Behind Blue Eyes is a beautiful song. Beautiful acoustic song. Works really, really well, just the acoustic. I've played it live a few times myself. But the tour de force of this album is I Won't Get Fooled Again, which you must have known from like CSI and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it starts is just that synth again. And the space that creates, I don't know if it creates that space if you don't know the song, right? So you've just, because you know that it's going to go ga ba ba, right? And you've got these huge big notes.
Down.
Yeah. Ga ga. So it's made for doing these big down windmills, etc.
It's very, yeah. I said this when we were listening to it today, it's very much a euphoric kind of, like, obviously it's used in CSI and things like that. Is not the other one that's used in CSI?
I think my understanding, I've never watched CSI, my understanding is it's a different Who song used in each one. So I think Bab O'Reilly's used in it, and I would imagine Won't Get Fooled Again is used in it as well. And then you've got that drum beat again. Go, ga, ga, do, go, ga, go, ga, ga, do, go, ga. Right, and it and it makes that space, mm-hmm. right? And then there is so much space because of how little Pete Townshend plays. We'll be fighting in the street, right? So the guitar's going, gung, gah, go. So there's like a full stop. There's like punctuation mm-hmm. that comes from the guitar. We'll be fighting in the streets, gah.
Full stop.
And our feet, gah.
Exclamation mark.
So it's got so much attack, and then like Roger Daltrey's almost an afterthought. The Who are a very strange band because the singer is probably one of the least important people. So the quiet, moody guitarist is the one that's writing all the stuff. He's the one that's putting forward all the emotion, and then the singer's just kind of representing that. So I was never quite sure with Roger Daltrey. He's definitely an amazing vocalist. It's a wonderful kind of vocal performance, but he's not my focal point of how I relate to the band.
Yeah.
Because Pete Townshend's the man behind it all. He's the genius. So Roger Daltrey's kind of had that kind of... He's just a kind of hired help almost, even though like his scream at the end of this, after it goes to this big quiet bit in the middle. Did you listen to like, the 9 minute version? Yeah.
No.
So it was like the 9 minute version's the one that's like usually in the album. Then there's this bit in the middle.
No, you gave me the tracks.
So it goes quiet. It goes dee 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 dee, right? And then dig it, and Keith Moon does this kind of, I suppose it's a drum solo. Then it comes back in with Roger Daltrey's. I've got quite a sore throat at the moment. Roger Daltrey may have done it better.
Maybe.
So it's like one of the best screams of and then in the video, Pete Townshend slides onto his knees as he hits the guitar and power slides across the floor. How he didn't skin his knees or at least get a tailing off from his mother for ruining his school trousers, I've no idea. But it's parodied in The Pick of Destiny with Jack Black. Jack Black recreates the move. And if you're of a certain age and grew up with classic rock, then you know exactly what he's doing. And it's a reference to that. I think he has to get the Pick of Destiny, he has to slide under a door or something like that. And he uses the Pete Townshend power slide to be able to do it. So it's, absolute classic, absolutely wonderful. My top tip to everybody is to go on YouTube and type John Entwistle isolated bass, and then you get the isolated bass for Won't Get Fooled Again, and everybody will be amazed how much John Entwistle was doing in that song.
Was that a lot?
Go just now, YouTube. It's absolutely unreal. So wow. John Entwistle, like Pete Townshend is playing so little, like in Pinball Wizard, the "Ever Since I Was a Young Boy I Played Silver Work, Gadown" is actually like mostly bass. So there we go. That was me doing a shortened version of me talking about an album.
I
really enjoyed that.
I have been enjoying listening to that album as well, so I think I will.
The Who are amazing.
Yeah.
One of the best bands of all time. And they're still touring. You know, I've never seen them live.
Hooring and touring. Who's in Turin?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because John Entwistle died at the age of around 60 with a lot of cocaine in his system and two prostitutes in his bedroom.
So how's he touring then?
Touring and hooring. He was touring and hooring about 5 years ago. 10 years ago, maybe.
When did he die?
Took a heart attack. Not that long.
But you said they're still touring?
Aye, the rest of them are still touring.
Cool.
Yeah, legends. I've never been to see them. It's always quite expensive. And I kind of should. But without Keith Moon, I'm not feeling it. Probably should. Pete Townshend.
But you're going to see the Spice Girls, so I mean, that just balances everything out. So swings and roundabouts and all that.
Yeah, totally.
So
you're going to talk about your album?
Yes. So, if you know me well,
yeah,
You know that I absolutely adore pink. And I always have, ever since I was younger. It was like the
first... Do you remember first discovering pink?
No, I don't. I always grew up listening to it.
You don't remember A World Before Pink?
I don't remember A World Before Pink. I used to... my first memory is we used to have... this the album we talk about, Misunderstood. 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 Say that again.
Misunderstood.
No, you said Misunderstood. we used to have this on CD, and me and my big sister and my two cousins, Alison and Lindsay, used to have this play. I think it was like the only CD we had that was interesting enough for us to want to listen to. So we would put this on and would make up dances. My sister was a very keen dancer. Me and Lindsay also did dancing, but my sister was always, she wanted to be, make up dances and have performed to my family and all that. So we used to do that, and that's my first memory of...
When did it come out?
2001.
Cool.
She had an album before this, called Can't Take Me Home, but it wasn't really on her terms. I think it was more written for her. So things like that. But anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm gonna need to make it short. But I remember becoming like a really, really huge fan when I was about 10, 11, when her album called I'm Not Dead came out, which is after this one, and the song Who Knew. Do you know that one?
I don't really know any of her stuff. No. Like when it comes on, the ones that I know, like Just Like a Pill.
Yeah.
I couldn't have told you it was Pink.
You just knew it.
I know. If you said, who's this? I would have said...
Brittany.
Gwen Stefani.
So, and I just totally fell in love with her. I used to love watching documentaries about her life and like interviews. Like, I was
I've come across
distorted.
So many folk that are like early to mid-20s or that age at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Who say the same thing? They're just they just attached to her personality, uh-huh. And she's obsessed with her.
I'm totally obsessed with her. Like, she's just dead funny and things like that. I could talk about her forever. But anyway, I'm going to see her.
Yeah.
I think I might have mentioned this in the previous episode, but maybe not.
Where's she playing? Is it Hampden
next year? So June. So me and my big sister are going to go to that.
Have you seen her before?
I seen her years and years ago, but it was before I was like a big fan.
Right.
So it was like Hampden. So it's Hampden again. So yeah.
It's Hampden again. Yeah. It's happening again.
And it's been a long wait for me because I've been desperate to see her, but I've actually struggled with it because I've kind of thought to myself, I don't know how I'm going to deal with it. Like, I don't know how...
You told me you were worried that the other folk that were going to this stadium gig might not be as into it as you were.
Yeah, that's my problem. No, this is... Seriously, I know it sounds really bad, but that's what my problem is. I'm like... When I knew the tickets were coming out and things like that, I was getting really stressed out. I was like, if I don't get a ticket and someone down the road from me that doesn't fucking know her gets to go, I will be livid. I've got tickets, don't worry. We don't have to worry about that.
It's the nature of concerts.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not really that much of a jealous person, but when it comes to this kind of thing, I'm like, I've got severe FOMO with the missing out on the pink gig. But anyway, I'm going to get on to it now because I'm chatting all the shit. But I'm going to talk about Misunderstood, which was her second album, and it was released in 2001. And it comes kind of under like the pop genre, but it's kind of R&B as well.
So is The Who. The Who were described as R&B.
Shut up.
Really? Nobody ever believes me. The Who were described as an R&B. You asked earlier what you'd describe it as.
Yeah, I said, what genre would you say it was?
R&B was how they were originally described. Maximum Rhythm and Blues, R&B. Obviously, the definition of that has changed somewhat, but as you were.
Crazy. And obviously, we pick three songs. So I've picked Don't Let Me Get Me, 18 Wheeler and Misery, which are one of them's like one of the best selling.
It's quite varied.
Yeah, it was varied. Yeah, that's what I quite liked. So Don't Let Me Get Me is like very recognisable. I'm pretty sure you recognise that song.
I recognised it as
as a big hit.
I wouldn't have recognised it as a
Pink song.
A Pink song.
Right.
Just because everything gets put in a bucket. I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to be sorry. Yeah. I did expect you to have heard it before anyway.
There'll be people out there that can't tell the difference between Pearl Jam and Creed, you know?
Probably me.
Yeah.
And yes, I really like this song. I love the music video to this song. Did you watch the music video?
No.
It's really cool.
What happens?
It's just like her at school and things like that. It's quite comical. And then she does this really cool bit in it where she like punches the mirror and it smashes. But she actually does punch a mirror to film the...
Cool.
Yeah, fun fact. And yeah, I just really like this song. It's catchy. I love it. I don't really have much else to say about it, but there is quite an interesting line in it. She was signed to LA Face Records, and there was a lot of kind of debate on her new music and stuff like that. They wanted her to sound more R&B like her previous album, but she was like, no, I want to do my own thing. I want to do pop rock, kind of more of that kind of thing. So one of the lines in the song says, LA told me, you'll be a pop star, all that you have to change is everything you are.
Yeah.
Which is Ellie Reid. She's talking about the
right.
The guy who...
I just assumed it was the town.
No.
It's quite a nice lyric if it's the town as well.
And he's actually kind of... He took that quite well because he's in the music video.
But you know, I think it's quite a good lyric if it's the town anyway. The idea that LA is where the music industry resides.
No, I know. But no, she's talking about Ellie Reid. But so they weren't... It says on Wikipedia that I already knew this, but the record label weren't initially like convinced with the new music she was making, because she'd already kind of made this reputation of an R&B debut album kind of thing like that. So, yes, the Don't Let Me Get Me was released as a single, and that and Just Like a Pill were probably the best, or Get the Party Started were probably the best singles on that album, most recognisable.
So I know all three of them, but how many singles were there on the album?
Four.
Right.
Yeah, four singles, Family Portrait as well. You probably know that one as well.
Not from the title, the others I know from the title.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, that's the only kind of popular single I picked up this album. And throughout this album, she worked with Linda Perry from Four Non Blondes, which is quite interesting because I've watched a lot of documentaries about Pink and things like that. And she talks about when she was younger how she used to just shout out her window, the song from Four Non Blondes, the
hey,
the one hit wonder.
What's going on?
And
I said.
Hey, yeah, yeah. We done that at a wedding not long ago. So she used to just shout that out her window, and she used to love Linda Perry, which is very strange because she had one hit.
Oh, it was massive though.
It was massive, but the rest of the stuff.
It was one of those ones where for about 2 years, if you turned on the radio and it wasn't on the station you were listening to, you would go through two stations before you actually found it. It was just like. Ridiculous, and then because it's the same chords all the way through in the guitar,
everybody
knew how
learned
to play it.
So she worked with Linda Perry. I think what she did was, I need to like look it up again, but I think she actually just phoned her up and said to her,
write an album with me.
And I think she wasn't convinced at first or something like that, and then. Something happened and she ended up doing that, so she wrote a lot of songs with her on the album. The next one I'm going to talk about is 18 Wheeler, which is loads of fun. And what did you think of it?
I listened to it. I didn't think there was anything that stood out to me. I thought the
maybe it's nostalgic for me.
I thought the production was quite good because it's that's kind of like dull, but dull in a good way. Dulled. Drum beat, kind of boom, 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 right?
You sound like you were joking on your own life.
Yeah, I possibly am. And they kind of made a groove out of that, the piano. So for a pop track, I thought that was quite interesting. Like, basically, my approach to pop is that there needs to be something hooky about the production that kind of works for me. Like, it's very rare that I like a hip-hop tune. But, like, if I do, it's usually because there's something really, really interesting happening in the background, the backing for it, that doesn't make it totally generic. I just kind of hear everything sounding the same when the production values are that high. So that I kind of took out as being quite...
Right, sorry,
I went for a pee. Tell me, there's two versions of 18-wheeler.
18-wheeler has two versions, but only one has been released, right?
Right.
So it's censored on every released version. But she performs like the uncensored version during live performances. But it was to avoid, like, she was targeting the younger...
demographic.
Yes. Demographic, that's the word.
So what's the censorship? She just says fuck in it, or
I'm not actually sure, I can't remember. I don't think it's that bad. She's got a lot of really, really right. See, after this podcast you have to listen to the song, a song called Fingers. And
is it about pointing at people?
No, it's yeah, it's about pointing somewhere. Pointing somewhere. Listen to it after the podcast. But anyway. That sounds strange. Anyway, so yeah, I quite like this. Is quite nostalgic for me. I think this song, I quite like it because we used to listen to this with my sister. I actually was speaking to Christy the other day about this album, and I was like, "What does this remind you of?" And the first thing she said was just making up dances in my auntie's house. Like, we'd do it all day. I think like I was just conditioned to like this album through just having it playing all the time.
Sounds sexist, but it's such a girl thing to do. I don't know where they decide that.
But my cousin Alistair was doing it with us.
Okay, but I where do you decide that making up dances is a pastime? Because as far as I know, women have always done it. but it's not as
maybe we should start doing it.
There's not a TV show. There's not. Maybe you can go on YouTube now, but this was well known before.
But everybody, YouTube. Every young girl goes to dance class.
Is that it?
I don't know. Like, not every. I don't mean to say every, but most girls would at least like. You know how like when you have a child. I don't have a child, but if you have a child, you might want to.
Not that you know of. How many children have you got? None that I know of.
None that I know of. Like, you would put your child into like football or swimming lessons or dance lessons, right? And dancing was always quite... I used to enjoy it because you'd get, like, once a year you would have a dance show and you could put makeup on and you'd just be the star and your family would come to you.
I've seen Bella and her cousins do all the little mixed dances and everything.
Yeah, so it's I think it's a thing, like, that's what we enjoy doing, so that's what we'll do. I don't know. Yeah. And then the act of, like, performing it to your parents and then being like, well done, that was amazing, kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, possibly.
But we would go to town, by the way. We would like have like props.
Dirty dancing jumps and everything.
No, not quite.
That's where that large hole in the plasterboard came from.
We'd have like bits where like, I don't even know, I can't even remember. I wouldn't be able to go into detail. But yes, love that one. And the last but not least, and I think you'll probably like this one.
Yeah, this would. But if I had to choose a favourite of the three, it would be this one.
Yeah, Misery, which is co-wrote by...
It's just written, no co-write. I don't think Pink has a writing credit in this.
Gone
to Wikipedia, which I found really interesting. I also thought it was quite weird that it's kind of presented, certainly on YouTube, not so much on the album, but presented on YouTube as... being a duet with Steven Tyler, but he doesn't do that much. She's brilliant. She's all over the place. But
there's different versions.
Right. Well, I listen to the album version.
Right. If you listen to there's a few different versions. He sings a whole verse and things like that.
Right.
Also, Bon Jovi. What's his name?
Richie Sambora.
He sings on it as well.
Right. Yeah. I saw that.
So, I like this song.
It's great. It's a banging tune. It's a great song.
It's a banging tune. That just sounds. That's Neil's way of saying it's fucking shite.
No, it's fine. It's like a kind of soul song. And yeah, I think it could grow on me. Do you know? I was looking through them, and this is what I kind of do with pop songs, because at some point I discovered that "Hit Me Baby One More Time" by Britney Spears is a great song to play on the acoustic guitar. Right, so it's a solid song. Right?
You need to learn to love pop if you're friends with me.
Yeah, but that's my go-to with pop, is that I try and play it on the guitar and see what it sounds like. Of the three, this one works really, really well.
That's just it.
As an acoustic guitar.
We should do it.
There we go. See.
I'm changing you. Changing any Pink fan?
Nah, I was never anti-Pink.
Were you more of a purple kind of guy?
Yeah, totally.
Like your mammy?
Yeah. I'm not anti-pop. I'm so far away from it that it just, it doesn't have much bearing on
it's quite life. Strange though, it's totally off track, but it's quite amazing how everybody has their own preferred genre, right? So like, everybody will have a type of music that makes their brain tick.
Do you think so?
I think
that's how it used to be. I think if you were a metalhead, then you listened to metal. And never
condition yourself to like metal.
So condition yourself to like metal. If you hated your parents and really, really persevered,
and you felt emotional about everything,
you could eventually like metal.
It's like an acquired taste.
Yes, very much so. And I don't think you can across the streams as much as you do now. Now you've got playlists, and folk will have Metallica into Pink into hip. Hippity-hoppity into Nora Jones.
The Teletubbies.
Whatever you think that... Because it's a playlist-driven generation now.
Yeah.
Whereas it was
all about that in uni just
It was
now.
A genre-driven thing before.
Yeah, it was more about buy an album, listen to the full album,
yeah.
Learn about that artist, read everything. You said you just read all the things on the back of an album.
Yeah, and then I would chase them up, and then I had various like encyclopedias of music.
Yeah.
So I could chase names in those encyclopedias, and it was like doing genealogy research or something like that.
And but nowadays it's literally like I go in my car and I'll decide that say I want to listen to I don't know a Pink song for example, and then I'll type in the song I want to listen to, and it comes on my phone. Well, not my phone, Spotify automatically build me a playlist based on that song.
So
and then the songs
20 content. Songs you're going to hear Gwen Stefani,
Gwen Stefani, Kelly Clarkson, Katy Perry, Lady
so
Gaga.
I've never done that. I've never had somebody give you the hits that you're likely to hear.
It's almost like it's kind of good, right?
The only time I do see it is when autoplay happens on YouTube, so that the if you're listening to
a live version
Sam
of
Sam and Dave,
or like June and Johnny or something, like something will come on after.
So if
it.
You're listening to like Sam and Dave, you go to Shredding Up Next or something like that.
But it's a kind of two way street with this, because it's really good in terms of it being quite convenient in the sense of doing you a favour with thinking that that's the music you like, but then it's almost in a sense conditioning you or telling you what to listen to. It's all these different opinions.
Ideally, the metrics get so good that they know what you want before you do.
It's the big data. Everybody knows. Everybody know. Folk know what music your next door neighbours are listening to and know what their favourite genre of TV programme as if they have a TV license.
Yeah.
Folk, obviously you don't really stream, do you?
Stream what?
Music.
TV or music? No, unless YouTube counts.
YouTube does count, because they'll have like a way of filtering
and even then,
you'll get a suggested videos.
But the majority of my YouTube listening is for work, so there'll be 60-70% is soul classics for the band. And then folk will send me and say, can you record me, but I want it to sound like this. So I'll maybe be listening to something for work that's not necessarily representative of my taste.
Like Taylor Swift for me?
Yeah, or one of the things I always say, I go running, I'm terrible at it. and I hate runners too, it's fine.
You're not terrible at it.
One of the things that I say though is that I really enjoy it because it lets me, I get to listen to music.
Because
I don't actually, I have to force myself to listen to my,
because
the music I want to listen
to.
So like when I'm trying to be, I'm a workaholic, so I have to try and like not work. And one of the things that I do to not work is lie on the couch and stick on some vinyl and
shut the curtains.
Yeah. If I started drinking again, I think I would kind of drink whiskey and do that, or drink red wine and do that.
One day, I've said this, I don't know if I've said this in the podcast yet, but one day I'm going to come into your house. I nearly said come home, so if I live here,
You're here more often than you're in your own house.
To be fair, yeah. One day I'm just going to come in here and Neil's going to be sitting with a empty bottle of Jack Daniels, totally blitzed on the couch, and just be like, I can't do it anymore!
No, it's not really like that.
No, I know it's not. I know it's not like that. I'm just joking. I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
Yeah, because you feel judged when I don't drink.
No, I don't feel judged. I hear all these funny stories of you when you were drunk.
They weren't that funny.
And no, there's some that are great that I can just totally imagine. I can't put two and two together, because since we've become close friends, you haven't drank. Obviously, I've been out with you before, and you've had the pints and stuff, but. Yeah. I've been drunk as well, so I don't know what you're like.
Notice.
I don't know what you're like, but
I don't know. I don't actually. Yes, so listen to music, as part of big data. I don't think I'm typical. I don't.
No, I don't think you're typical.
So they don't really.
Unless
know.
There's some spy living in your room.
Well, I used to. There used to be a thing called Last FM, which I guess still exists, which used to take the data of what you listen to on your. This is pre Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Take the data of what you listen to in your iPad. The Yorkshire. It was a cheap Yorkshire version of the iPad. iPad. iPod. I knew there was. I was even saying the wrong word. iPad. iPod. One of those things. That,
iPod.
Oh man.
No, you actually said iPod. Did you say it in an Irish accent?
I said iPod.
iPod.
And I meant to say iPod, but I said iPad. And anyway, iPod. I used to have all my arms in my iPod, and it would give you all that data.
All your
tell
arms?
You, yeah, it would tell you albums.
Arm?
Albums. All my albums were on my iPod.
Say arms?
This is you without drink.
Sorry, I'm just laughing. I'm giggling.
So, it used to be able to tell you what the demographic was compared to what you were listening to and what the male to female split was. That doesn't matter, we don't see gender. But it was kinda interesting to kinda see who did what. But that was the early days of that. Now I don't think I give very honest data about my personal tastes to the internet.
Mm-hmm. And which probably is the same case for a lot of people.
I don't know. I also don't know how much use. I think we're at the stage where everybody's collecting the data, but they don't quite know what they're going to do with it yet. I see a lot of that with kind of startups, where they kind of sometimes they value their user data is obviously really, really.
It's
valuable,
very important,
right?
Because you can develop your product around that. But
sometimes I think the gathering of it is more important than the understanding of it. Anyway, this is a huge, massive topic.
I quite like this chat. I like all this chat. I don't think the rest of the world will agree with us.
Do you want to pick my brains about user testing and ICT
maybe
research?
Maybe we'll not do that. I was going to say that maybe I could play a song. Maybe we're going to do that.
Play out with a song?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to move the microphones, but yeah.
But we don't have to finish.
Right, let's play out with a song then. And here it is. Ailey, what's your song called? He's not decided yet.
So right. Surprise!
Ailey's going to play us out with a song. Thank you.
my day. Like it was yesterday, along this road we walked under Scottish sun. Oh boy, we talked, and just like that
that'll do, donkey. That'll do.